Okay.
There's this guy who gets lost in Ireland, and it's the middle of the night, so he's looking for some sign of life, and he sees up on the hill, he sees a little house with lights on, so he follows this long fence up to the top of the hill, and he realises it's a pub, goes in the pub, it's completely empty except for the barman, so he goes up to the bar and he says, pint of Guinness, please. Barman says, certainly, sir, pint of Guinness. And as he's pulling it, he says, did you notice that fence as you come up? He says, yeah, I did. Nice. I followed it up, actually. Nice, straight fence. He said, I made that fence myself. He said, did they call me Jones the fence maker? No. Guys. So he gets his drink and he's starting to drink his Guinness. And then the guy says, do you like this bar? That's solid mahogany, that. He said, I made that. Myself. So that's a very nice bar, actually. Yeah, you made that yourself? Fantastic. He said, and do they call me Jones, the bar maker? No. I said, okay. He says, and what do you think of that? What do you think of that Guinness? Do you think I've pulled it well? He said, that's a very well pulled pint. Yes, I love that. He said, and do they call me Jones, the Guinness puller? No. He says, but you fuck one goat.
Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul, all of the time. Join me, your host Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com.
Hello, goodbye, hello, goodbye, hello, goodbye! This is a special bonus episode because I am doing this on the fly. I have found myself with an extra hour, and we've been having an absolutely brilliant month this month, so I thought, hey, why not whip up some bottom of the barrel, lowest common denominator, easy peasy content for me to put out this month and artificially boost my downloads. Now, today's episode was also brought to you by the blog. Yes, we do have a blog, folks. I do mention it often enough, which is www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. And this article has been up on the blog now for quite a while. This is one of my favourite ones to write. And as you can guess by the title, so today we're going to be studying and exploring one of the most regularly mocked and oft-maligned parts of Paul McCartney's career. Today we will, of course, be talking about the top 12 Paul McCartney granny songs. Like I just said, you could have found this article on the blog much earlier. That's www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. We have loads of articles up every week. We should have a new one up within the next day or two, where I will be running down the entirety of Paul McCartney's album covers and ranking them from top to bottom. Check us out on Facebook and YouTube simply by typing in Paul McCartney Pod or Paul or Nothing. Follow us on the Twitter, that's the central hub for the show, the best way to stay in contact with the show, that's simply at McCartney Pod. Check out our Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/McCartneyPod. We've actually had one of our first big contributors now, he'll be on the show soon. Woohoo! $5 a month! Thank you very much, Matt, out there. This episode is dedicated to you. When you've got a spare 5 minutes, drop us an iTunes review when you can. You know you want to. And last but certainly not least, drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. That's paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. The thing I'm wanting to hear about most of all, folks, is your Paul McCartney stories. When did you buy his first album? When did you first get into Paul McCartney? Have you seen him live? Have you met him? Anything at all, no matter how tenuously linked to Paul McCartney, I want to read it out. Send it to paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Now, when I talk to you about an artist range, there will be two points at the end of a spectrum, whereby everything between these two polar opposites is inevitably judged against and compared to. The problem therein can mean that you either split or divide a fan base by not having a distinct sound. And when you have Paul McCartney, a man whose tastes vary as far as Carl Perkins to Kanye West, it's very hard to pin you down as one particular thing. Humans like to put things in boxes and categorise things. Is McCartney a rock star? Not quite. Is he a pop star? Possibly. But is he a guitarist, a pianist, a composer, a songwriter? Which one is he? Well, he's all of these things and more. So the result of this can firstly be very positive. If you're a fan of anything the man produces, whether it be Say 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 or Queenie Eye, then you are really going to get a cornucopia of different styles that truly broadens your taste palette. On the flip side, we have some very tribalistic behaviour, whereby one of more sections of Paul's work, such as his electronic dabbling or his orchestral experimentation, is completely vilified by a section of the community constantly. And it's a debate that has never really subsided within the fan base. Some people detest these tracks so much that they will actively skip those granny songs time and time again, and even base their whole opinion on Macca as a whole on said minuscule subsection of his discography. I, for one, happen to believe that if you're going to be a fan of Paul McCartney's work, then you really have to take him on as a whole package, warts and all. And besides, it really doesn't make sense to restrict oneself in such a manner, as it greatly reduces the amount of stellar McCartney tracks you can be exposed to. Yes, Wings at the Speed of Sound may be sloppy as fuck, but it has Beware My Love. And yeah, of course McCartney 2 is jarring and weird, but Dark Room and Temporary Secretary are two of Macca's most interesting tunes to date. So I find it easier in my search for classic tunes to play it safe, play the long game, and wade through all the filler. This brings me nicely onto the point of this very article. Yes, you could just say that this is shameless list-making clickbait, and you would only be half right, but the idea that there are songs written by Paul, a man who is brave enough to try so much to spread himself so far, that are then utterly despised by a segment of the community is of great interest to me. And, of course, the most iconic of these off-putting, divisive styles that Paul continues to dabble in time and time again, Spring, is his penchant for throwback, musical, ragtime, old-timey ditties, or more affectionately known by Lennon and his compatriots as Paul's granny shit. I, for one, in my own lame little way, have always had an unabashed affection for these type of tunes, as I find them the most endearing in his extensive discography. I am an old romantic and a sucker for a love song, so sue me. A lot of music has faux machismo and overt seriousness to it, and what McCartney tunes do is simply get rid of all that baggage and swap it out for a more innocent and relaxed mindset. It's this lack of pretense or real care as to what listeners would probably, and in all honesty, want, is the very thing that draws me to his granny songs over and over. I like them because they are so ostensibly unlikable for the most part. I love how he puts these songs in here just because he likes them. They are the great fuck you audience of the McCartney songbook, and on top of that, they are also some of his strongest canon tunes. But that's also my opinion. So, while the hate, I can kind of empathise with these people. It is a bit naff at the end of the day, isn't it? And you won't look particularly cool playing something akin to Cheek to Cheek amongst your school chums. But again, it's the anti-rebelliousness that's present within these granny tunes is what makes them fun in the first place. Do people not know that they are pastiches? Do people not know that these songs are meant to be taken as seriously as something like Yesterday or Let It Be? These songs are Paul having fun, and we should be having fun with him. Today, on this bonus episode, all I'm here to do is rank the 12 best of Paul's homages to that old Tin Pan Alley music hall, old-fashioned granny-type songs, and I'll be reviewing them, not necessarily in regards to his whole discography, but on their own terms, in terms of what they set out to do and achieve in their own individual merits. Admittedly, there's going to be a fine line between what John Lennon dubbed as Paul's granny shit and other songs that are just simple, whimsical, or saccharine pop tunes, so I'll try my best to describe why I personally think each song deserves to be on this list. So, here we go, folks. Another little bonus episode for you. And here we are, the 12 best or worst, depending on which side of the fence you're on, Paul McCartney granny songs. Here we go. At number 12, we have Teddy Boy from McCartney 1. And it's odd that this is the only song on this list that isn't piano-based. So at first it might be tricky to see how this song is in the same category, especially considering how low on the rankings it is in the first place. However, despite the lack of McCartney's signature instrument for these kind of tunes, its excessive, overly sentimental atmosphere and twee familial attitude, this song regularly refers to mommy above all other things, means that it is more than at home amongst the other McCartney granny tunes. Written and debuted during the Get Back Let It Be sessions, Teddy Boy was part of an attempt by Paul to get back to his original musical roots, but its unpolished production and unfinished lyricism means that it doesn't have the same timeless quality that the others possess. It's a fairly strong lyric and a fairly memorable guitar melody, but they feel a little unsuited for each other. For example, Paul was also working on another Al Jolson, Fred Astaire type track during this time, which he revisited during the Water Wings sessions, called Suicide, which had a much more direct and obvious connection with that genre of music, despite only existing in demo form. And despite only existing in demo form, fares far better than this tune. I mean, I probably could have just replaced Teddy Boy with Suicide, or Womenkind or any of the other bonus Al Jolson type tunes that Paul McCartney does, but hey, I thought I'd keep it just to the official album tracks, at least for this list. At number 11 we have Obladi Oblada from the White Album. Part granny song, part pisshead pub classic. This song was one of the first McCartney pastiche compositions that drove Lennon mad due to its seemingly throwaway surface nature. The truth is, Lennon always struggled to make songs so unabashedly fun like this that they could actually put a cheeky little smile on the listener's face. It just wasn't Lennon's style. Obladi Oblada is a unique fusion of Paul's musical stylings, pop and reggae, which creates this very unique texture and atmosphere. Throughout all of these songs, this is the one that can be sung by most people anywhere, anytime, and that alone is a hallmark of an old-timey, broad, mass-appeal granny tune. The opening cascade of piano exuberance is an instant success the moment you hear it. Even if in retrospect you find the song to be a little flawed, you hear McCartney joyfully bashing away at those keys, and it's awfully hard not to be on board for the ride before the bouncy bassline and hand claps even kick in. But yeah, this song really isn't drumming the depths of the human condition or anything, but the story it does tell has a uniquely silly and endearing quality to it, whereby you know it really isn't meant to be anything more than a have some fun type of tune. I think ultimately this song has been overplayed thanks to the band Marmalade who covered it, and unfortunately it has to share the album with two other fantastic McCartney granny tunes, but more on them later. And to start the top 10 we have Your Mother Should Know from the Magical Mystery Tour. The beautiful poetry of this particular track is that it's possibly the most self-aware as to what it is. In a way, it's almost like McCartney's trying to sidestep the criticisms of doing another granny song like this through being very direct with his lyricism. Not only does this song directly and repeatedly reference the musical tradition that came before the Beatles, but rather effectively, it does genuinely sound like it could have been the aforementioned hit from Before Your Mother Was Born. Your Mother Should Know is a little more throwaway than other McCartney granny tunes, and the lyrics feel a little undercooked, which results in its low placing. However, despite being up against McCartney's other two contributions, the song is still one of the highlights of the Magical Mystery Tour, and slots in well to the eclectic weirdness that that record represents. I mean, even though it's sandwiched between the psycho-mystical Blue Jay Way and the avant-garde I Am the Walrus, it's the throwback pastiche that comes out as the most outlandishly oddball. And either way, it still contains the same kind of root core appeal, melodic grace, and sheer sing-along ability that all half-thought-out McCartney tunes have, that ultimately stops it from getting as repetitive as it probably could be. At number 9 we have Honey Pie, again from the White Album. So when Paul created the alter ego of Sgt. Pepper, he had forever opened the floodgate that not even the other three Beatles would be able to contain. The first of Paul's three incredibly corny offerings from this Titanic double album, Honey Pie is McCartney's first real attempt at doing one of these songs as close to the traditional sound as possible, and strays away from the relative safety that a Beatlesization of a song could offer. At first, this song reminded me of the Tom Waits 1987 track Innocent When You Dream, 78, which is another track whereby the writer attempts to harken back and attempt to faithfully recreate the sounds of a bygone era. But, as with all popular musical innovations since 1962, the Beatles did it first. Both songs are clearly very fond of this type of music, but the crucial difference here is that Innocent When You Dream, 78, feels like an antique. It feels like a relic from the past. Whereas Honey Pie, the song that I'm actually supposed to be talking about on this episode, actually feels like you are transported back to the Roaring Twenties, and feels like a song that would have actually more likely have been a contemporary hit at the time. It's lively, it's saccharine and sweet, and innocent and totally fluffy, but by God it's catchy, well-performed, well-meaning fluff. And that crackle, and that 78 RPM crackle is just one of the best things to hear on vinyl. It just ages the song beautifully. So that's Honey Pie in a nutshell. You can either appreciate it, that it's actively trying to sound like something that no one wants to listen to and accept it, or you can grind your teeth whilst you listen to it. And it is admittedly one of the most diversive Marmite tracks on the Beatles' White Album, and I think it feels this way because so much of the band was about moving forward, and sometimes it seemed like a stunted growth whenever a throwback like this was chucked in. But alas, that is all part of the eclectic mismatched experience that is the White Album. Paul called it one of his fantasy songs, and its McCartney-esque sensibilities and mindset are plastered all over this song. No points for guessing who wrote this one in the Beatles. Though, in spite of this, the fact that all the other three of the Beatles do feature on this song, it hardly comes across that way. And this strain of McCartney really going off to do his own thing without the group stands out all too clear for some. And coming in at number 8, we have Baby's Request. We all knew Paul wouldn't have been able to hold out for a whole album performing just punk rockers and new wave grooves. He would have to give us some sort of pastiche before Wings ended. And the song that does end Wings' entire run was, of course, an entirely McCartney-centric creation through and through. And it makes sense, really, as he was growing increasingly weary of this group dynamic, so it seems a rather poetic ending for him to actually just do a straight-up McCartney granny song. Many people in the McCartney fan base and literature often point out that Baby's Request is one of the standout tracks from Back to the Egg, despite the fact that it has nothing to do with the rest of the album. It is a bit of an anomaly, and it could have pretty much appeared on any McCartney release, though this may also work in the song's favour, as the fact that it could have easily appeared on anything from Tug of War to New shows how just well realised a music hall homage it was the first time around, as McCartney will never not write these types of tunes. So, thank God he does them well. The song boasts an inherently catchy and charming laid-back rhythm, complete with rumpy-pumpy brass segments and that patented rock-solid Wings group harmony. McCartney's tender and whimsical voice feels incredibly smooth, and when it travels down your ear canal, he perfectly plays up to that familiar, familial, friendly crooner image. Again, you can very much tell that this is the type of song that McCartney wishes he had written 40 years prior and could have performed 30 years prior. The music video for this song only goes to reinforce the notion that the song is a homage to the 40, as it features McCartney and co. donning World War II uniforms as they play a very Casablanca-type rendition of the track In the Desert. Coming in at 7, we have Single Pigeon. I've always had a soft spot for this tune, and whilst Red Rose Speedway is an album that is overly saturated with wishy-washy piano performances, it is this little 1 minute 52 track where he sounds most at home playing the instrument he was born to play. I don't want to say too much about this one. I never do. It's always had a very tender spot in my heart, especially those of you who've been listening to this podcast for a while. It's a sublimely affectionate and personable little song, full of heart, and is one that warrants a lack of overtly microscopic analysis. So I'm not going to do any. At 6, we have You Gave Me the Answer from Venus and Mars. This is the original Wings granny track, really. I first heard this song during my research for my Venus and Mars episode, and I remember not being terribly impressed by it on any level. I kind of thought it was tasteless, that it killed the flow of this supposed follow-up rock album to Band on the Run, but over the ensuing months, it kept popping up on shuffle and playlists, and by now I'm completely won over by its horrendously corny charm. On the surface, this track may simply seem like Wings' own version of something like Honey Pie, and in many ways it is, but it's certainly more honed, more refined, and a more pure execution of Paul's vision. To me, this song completely fulfills its objective of trying to recreate a roaring 20s bopper. Paul's vocal is even distorted and warped to faithfully evoke the effect of singing into an old 78 RPM style microphone to fantastic effect. I mean, this track could easily be played at the start of Peter Jackson's King Kong in lieu of Al Jolson's Top of the World. When performed, this Vince and Mars classic was often, if not always, dedicated to Fred Astaire, of whom McCartney was a massive pathetic fanboy, and it almost appears to have been written by McCartney for some alternative universe where he was working in Tin Pan Alley during the 30s and was writing a song for Speck for Fred Astaire. And to his credit, he pulls it off with all the carefree optimism and simple, loving tuning that a song like this requires. Also, please make the time to check out the live version of this song that was performed over Wings Over America, whether that's on the rock show or on the actual album, whether that's on the rock show film or on the actual album, because it's even better than this one, and the step up in the tempo just turns this song into the showstopper that it was born to be. At number 5, we have Martha, My Dear, also from the White Album. There are very few songs that have the instantaneous ability to put a smile on my face as much as Martha, My Dear does, and even fewer are about a shaggy sheepdog from the 60s. To me, it's the underrated gem of the Beatles' self-titled double album, and the reason why this one is so high on the list is because it managed to tread so finely between the lines of old tastes and new without sounding like a complete mess. This is a song that I'll inevitably talk to death about on this blog whenever I do one of these McCartney anything type lists, as it's easily one of my most cherished tunes in his whole discography. But what I will say is that out of all of these songs, it is the one that plays the most with your expectations as to what type of McCartney throwback this is going to be. The fact that it starts off with an ever so British falsetto vocal and harmoniously sweet, kind of lush, overly produced piano, that kind of lulls you into thinking that this song will play out in a very comfortably safe way. And then just as you're accepting that notion, bam, the whole song explodes into a jaunty rock tune. If anything, the song is a microcosm of McCartney's taste in music in general and demonstrates the different areas he's constantly being pulled in. Half of his fans want him to go one way and the other half want him to go another. So here he is trying to make something to appeal to both halves at the same time without feeling like there are too many cooks spoiling the broth or that he's spreading himself too thin. Again, there is nowhere but the White Album where a song like this could have been born, as McCartney's wildly varying tastes could not be contained within one song or one album. Martha, My Dear is a granny song that works because it stays faithful to both contemporary rock sensibilities and the music hall tradition that McCartney grew up in. It's not exactly a seamless blend, but the two respective halves still stand tall on their own merits. Coming in for a pewter medal at number 4, we have English Tea, which is from Chaos and Creation in the Backyard. Recently, I've become absolutely obsessed with this song, and honestly, I was quite surprised at how much life and energy was in such a late-day McCartney recording. I mean, how naive I was at that time. The man's still going strong, but it was very shocking at the time. I probably wouldn't have even checked out Chaos and Creation in the Backyard in full as early as I did, had it not been for this track. And possibly Jenny Wren as well. What sets a song like this apart from the others is just how accepting of itself it truly is, and how little it has to prove in terms of trying to jazz things up, or win over a more conventional audience. McCartney, now free from the shackles of being a chart-topper darling, is able to rely on this massive pre-established fan base that just trust him and buy whatever music he may decide to plonk on his next record. I'll do it. Unlike the rest of the songs on this list, English Tea seems to be a callback to an even older time in English history, so far that you can feel Victorian smog in the air and the smell of colonialist imperialism. This gives the whole thing a distinctly timeless Britannia feel to it, where you cannot conceive of any time and place where this song wouldn't be appropriate. It feels like the most earnest song in its objective as well. Perhaps it's due to McCartney's own ageing, but many of the other songs on this list feel somewhat like a writing exercise on Paul's part, and instead, English Tea feels like an earnest and genuine attempt at a sentimental little microcosm world of his. The song is also delightfully aware and self-aware of what it is and who's writing it. Paul's declaration of "very twee, very me" is the veritable smoking gun in the great debate of whether Paul does indeed know what fans think about his granny music. But rather than shying away from his well-worn tropes, he embraces them and in doing so recreates one of the best songs on the album. The song is also refreshingly and wholly innocent of the world around it, as it references outmoded Dickensian terms like peradventure, which apparently means maybe, and the antiquated meaning of the word gay, to be happy. Fuck, there were so many idiotic YouTube comments that don't understand the word gay. Fuck those people. And in doing this, he gets to ditch the cynicism and apathy of the modern world and successfully transport us back to a purer, simpler time. English Tea feels like the kind of song that Paul could write in his sleep and would be comfortable writing in his sleep for the rest of his life. It's natural, free-flowing, and very, very Paul. And in all honesty, with all its gluttonous levels of whimsy and Dunkirk spirit, I would be more than happy for Paul to continue writing songs of this quality for the rest of his life, as long as we get the occasional Fireman album as well. And starting off the top three, we have When I'm 64 from Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I already labelled this as my favourite Paul McCartney Beatles song on one of the earlier blog posts, and I think I've turned that blog post into an episode as well. But that doesn't necessarily mean that When I'm 64 is his best granny song, though it is damn close. It's effortlessly catchy with a melody that feels as if it's something ingrained and encoded within our DNA as something that brings pleasure. This is easily Paul's most accessible and well-known tracks from this niche genre of his, and it was also the beginning of the end for anyone who simply wanted Paul to belt out rockers till the end of time. Once you've opened the floodgates, there's no going back. When I'm 64 ranks so highly, not just because it's a masterfully crafted, perfectly executed Paul McCartney music hall track, which it is, but because of the context surrounding its inception. In creating Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and the subsequent pseudonym of the eponymous Sgt. Pepper, McCartney was freed of the rock and roll constraints of the Beatles, and really sets the standard for their discography to get even weirder and eclectic over time. In a way, except for the obvious big hitters like Yesterday and Penny Lane, this could easily be seen as one of the very first out-and-out, purebred, inherently McCartney-based compositions, as it's so clearly against what the rest of the band were writing at the time, to the extent whereby you might consider the possibility that Paul came up with the Sgt. Pepper pseudonym just so he could play fucking When I'm 64 on the album. What's more, what makes When I'm 64 so endearing and effective is that it's a song pulling in two thematic directions. In terms of the composition, it's a song that harkens back to the 20s and 30s. However, the lyrics refer to a couple talking about their time in the future. And it's this combination that makes the song as classically out of time as it is. Meaning anyone at any age, at any time, can sing away. Number two, we have Ballroom Dancing from Tug of War. If you'd have asked me a few months ago whether I would have had anything positive to say about ballroom dancing, I would have laughed like a musketeer. Ha ha. But after having taken multiple stabs at Tug of War, I can honestly say that for me at least, this is easily one of the standout tracks. And yes, folks, you are allowed to say that Here Today isn't automatically the de facto best song on Tug of War. Ballroom dancing is what happens when Paul decides to add some much-needed bollocks and runaway energy to one of his romantic throwbacks, resulting in an uncommonly exhilarating experience for this period for McCartney. Macca has been writing these types of songs for years now, as we know, and you can see the evolution of how he arrived at this one, you know. Whereas Martha, My Dear is a fine example of Paul putting two musical styles side by side in a wonderful kind of I've Got a Feeling fashion, where the two halves are distinctly separate. Ballroom Dancing is higher up on this list because it's the wholly seamless fusion of the 20s Tin Pan Alley sensibilities with that bombastic, mature McCartney rocker into one entity. And we all know that McCartney is a master of fusing two styles together that he's familiar with, but I really wasn't expecting something like this so soon after McCartney 2. And yet, surprisingly, it still sounds as contemporary as anything he's ever written, and proves that you can breathe some life into these well-worn stylings. In the song, Paul proudly declares, "I got what I got from ballroom dancing," and therein you can pretty much tell the purpose of this track. This is the song that most overtly pays tribute to those old classics. And Paul basically tells us through the song that he wouldn't be able to do what he does today, making the cool rockers and weird synthy instrumentals, if it were not for that plinky-plonky ballroom dancing. And at number one, we have a rather controversial song. We have Maxwell Silver Hammer from Abbey Road. Now, I know a lot of you out there, John Lennon included, RIP, will utterly despise my top pick for this list, but that's almost entirely the reason I've put it here in the first place. If this list is a ranking of songs that are the most divisive within the Beatles-McCartney fandom, then look no further. The fact that the whole anti-granny movement vehemently rejects Maxwell Silver Hammer is the smoking gun that this is Macca's single best entry into the genre, as it shows that the song that most accurately taps into that nonsense, silly granny spirit that the detractors just can't stand. Like Obladee Oblada, this song took forever to nail in the studio and drove the other three Beatles to distraction, as it took time for McCartney to craft these homage tunes to sound exactly the way he wanted them to sound, and you can really hear that meticulous effort in the final product. Whether you think this is your kind of song or not, you can't take the craft away from it. If Ballroom Dancing was Granny Needs Rock, then this song is a mashup of like granny music and dark kind of proggy surrealism that would normally clash with such a track. However, these Clash of Styles kind of worked in a Monk Berry Moon Delight sort of way, whereby the underrated McCartney brand weirdness is all very incidental and can slip by if you're not paying attention. The song is both a wonderfully inventive exercise for McCartney, as he proves that it's not just the content of the words, but how they are sung and the music surrounding them. In a way, it's a very subversive track, as its radio-friendly atmosphere allows its delightfully gruesome story to slip past the censors. For those of you who are blissfully unaware, this is a song about an unstoppable, prolific serial killer. The whole project comes across as Paul in the vein of something like Silly Love Songs and Famous Groupies, where he's directly addressing and mocking criticisms levelled against his music, namely his granny tunes. So what does he do in response? Well, he creates a song with the most delightfully upbeat, plinky-plonky twiddle ever, and then adds a lyricism filled with this dark, grisly series of murders. This gives us the song an interesting premise to wrap our little brains around, as well as a hilariously morbid sense of humour, the result of which is a bunch of mums, dads and kids all singing along like it's kids' TV shows about a man bashing a woman's brains in. And to be fair, these might be some of the most overtly dark lyrics the Beatles ever put out. Whatever McCartney's ultimate motivations behind the songs were, the results are still the same, and it stands the test of time. Should it have been the single for Abbey Road, as Macca originally intended? Hell no. Is it one of the most inherently eclectic oddball Beatle tracks of all time? Hell yes. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, and non-gender binaries. These are the best of Paul's silly, billy little types of music. Let me tell you, out of all the clickbait lists that I've ever done, this has probably been the hardest to pick for the number one spot. But now this is where you get involved. Do you think that I got the list right? Are there songs that I left off? Should some songs not have even been on this list at all? If you have a different opinion on McCartney's granny music, please drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts. Thank you very much for listening to this one, folks. This was a nice little bonus episode just for me to record. I'm really enjoying making this podcast for you. It's great that the show's doing so well and that our numbers are boosting up and that we're getting out more content for you. And that's not going to stop anytime soon. There are lots of exciting episodes on the way. The Carney episode is very, very soon, as well as our Magical Mystery Tour review as well. Hope you're all having a nice day, folks. Hope everything's fine in your corner of the world. If you're listening to this from outside the UK, thank you so much. That's a massive ego boost for me as well. And before I go, Twitter is @McCartneyPod. Email again is paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. The blog is paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. The Patreon is patreon.com/McCartneyPod. Find us on Facebook and YouTube simply by typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Pod. And I'm sure Denny Lane's playing us out right now, folks. If you have any ideas for bonus episodes or bonus content, use that email that I've just given you. Ooh, I can hear those sweet, sweet notes now. Keep listening to Paul. Keep enjoying the music. Tug of War's not too far away, folks. Have a great day.